Most business schools in the United States teach graduate students by case analysis, using the often real life experiences of companies as lesson plans to promote sound business practices. Kindred Spirits is a new book about a class of MBA students more interesting, more powerful, and more visionary than all the cases they learned about put together. The Harvard Business School class of 1949 produced the kinds of leaders who built empires out of Johnson & Johnson, Xerox, Bloomingdale's, the Sequoia Fund, Capital Cities ABC, and scores of other American businesses and multinationals. Our business commentator, Joe Nocera, is executive editor at Fortune magazine, which ran one of the first stories about this legendary class. He joins us from our studios in New York City. Hi, Joe.
Hi, John.
And the author of Kindred Spirits is David Callahan, who joins Joe in New York. Welcome, Mr. Callahan.
It's great to be here.
Let's start with you, Mr. Callahan. You write about the people in this class of 700 students. They weren't exactly great students, but they had an uncanny sense of confidence in themselves and in their futures. Help us understand why.
Well, these men came of age during the Great Depression. Then they went on and they fought in World War II. 90% of the entering class of 49 were in the war. And they were extremely impatient, many of them, to get out and make their mark and to help create a more dynamic business world. Tom Murphy, who went on to become the media mogul who took over ABC in the 80s, left a very secure job at Lever Brothers in the 1950s and went up to Albany to take over a single television station which was failing and parlayed that into one of the largest media empires in America.
Anyone else who you think stands out particularly? Or
well, I think Bill Ruane, of the Sequoia Fund, who was a contemporary and friend of Warren Buffett, and who built a hugely successful fund based on value investing as opposed to go-go growth investing. And Marvin Traub is a really interesting figure, and the story of Bloomingdale's is a wonderful, interesting tale.
Well, one of my favorites is Peter McCullough, who left a very secure job in the 1950s in the coal industry, and he joined a small and very struggling company called Holloyd, and he helped build that company into the powerhouse that became Xerox.
On the other hand, were they simply lucky? That is, they came out of a wartime economy with a huge amount of pent-up consumer demand.
They certainly were very lucky coming out at the dawn of the greatest economic boom in American history.
You know, John, there was a lack of a lot of the pressures that exist today. The shareholder pressure, the need to do things quickly or you're out of a job. I mean, Peter McCullough at Xerox, their first big copier, the one that really transformed the world, I mean, it took them 7, 8, 9 years to develop that. And then they wound up completely dominating the market with no competition for over a decade.
Mm-hmm. Joe, what would you say these men did to transform the way business was conducted in the United States? What was their contribution, do you think?
Well, I think it's actually more mixed than I think David does. You know, certainly they made corporate America more energetic and more adventurous in the companies that they themselves ran. But they did a lot to prod along the consumerist impulses that were there anyway, and which we now so completely take for granted, the whole sort of marketing, that you have to buy this even if you already have enough.
But this group of men exhibited very laudable values. They believed in socially responsible companies, and many of them were leaders in that area. They didn't believe in paying themselves huge amounts of money. They think that the kinds of salaries that CEOs are being paid today are obscene. At the same time, they were almost victims of their own success.
It certainly is tempting to draw a contrast between this group of Harvard Business School graduates from 1949 and the current crop of CEOs, the Ken Lays of Enron, the Bernie Ebers of WorldCom, and all of those who have fallen from grace. I wonder, though, were these gentlemen really more moral than the CEOs of today, or were they simply living in a different time?
Well, they were certainly living in a different time, and the social norms of that time stressed loyalty to employees, stressed a social contract within the company, and it was just not acceptable to pay yourself 300 times the average worker, which is what the average CEO makes today. But none of them use their money to engage in the kind of conspicuous consumption that we see CEOs engaging in today with, you know, Ken Lay owned 3 houses in Aspen. Bill Gates has built a 100,000-square-foot house. These guys actually didn't really know what to do with their money when they achieved the success that they did. Tom Murphy, who made millions and millions of dollars, said that he always had this dream that if he ever made $250,000, he would buy himself a Cadillac. He bought himself a Cadillac once he became quite successful and didn't really know what to do with the rest of his money. So he gave it away to charity and became a philanthropic leader.
These things go in cycles, I think. And one of the things that's happening in corporate America now is that you're seeing a bunch of new, younger CEOs who are absolutely espousing the values of the 49ers. So you have people like A.G. Lafley at Procter & Gamble and Jim Kilt at Gillette and Jamie Dimon at Bank One. And there's a whole bunch of these guys. And they all talk very specifically about the need to care about more than the stock price, to let the business drive the stock rather than the other way around, to not be overtly greedy. So I do think we are entering an era where one hopes the values that the 49ers carried through their career will be recaptured at the top of corporate America.
Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
David Callahan is the author of Kindred Spirits about the Harvard Business School class of 1949. Joe Nocera is our regular business commentator. He's an executive editor at Fortune magazine.